freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
It's the post-Seahawks season Brock and Salk podcast. The first one we've done since the Seahawks season has come to an end. It's over, right? They're not going to play another game. It's not like college football. They're not going to play again in 3 weeks or something.
No.
I thought it was over, and then all of a sudden it's back from the dead. They're not playing again. That's it. You lose to Green Bay, and you got to go home.
You lose in that divisional round of the playoffs yet again.
Yeah.
Out on the road again, where it's hard. It's hard to win. I did not have a great feeling, and in fact, I want to start with this quick story. I was on the ferry Friday heading up to Macy's basketball game in Port Townsend, the Bainbridge or the Edmonds to Kingston Ferry. I'm sitting there and kind of minding my own business, and a guy walks by with his significant other, and he kind of turns around. I'm like, oh, okay. He turns around to come talk to me. He's like, dude, why do you hate the Seahawks?
Yeah, why do you?
I'm like, what do you?
What's up with that, Brock?
Whoa, easy. What do you mean? He's like, you're so mean to them. Like, I heard you this morning. So this has been Friday on one of the shows. I heard you this morning. You don't think they have any chance? I'm like, I think they got a chance, but yeah, I think it's going to be really tough in Green Bay.
Right.
Yeah, it's the first time in a long time that someone publicly, right up in my face, not happy about my take on these
Seahawks. I call
shenanigans
on the whole story because I've never seen you mind your own business. That's not how you are. You're sort of an out there.
Whoa.
Like, you're in everybody else's business.
Dead giveaway
that this story's a lie.
Liar!
This story is just not true.
I got my chowder and I was sitting on a little bench by the window all by my lonesome.
Nope,
I was.
Don't believe it for a minute.
Yes,
all by your lonesome, just with an arrow that pointed to you and said, talk to me, please. I don't believe for a minute that you were just sitting by yourself.
That's my father. You're confusing me for Coach Huard.
Nobody had a choice. I mean, if you were paying attention to the Seahawks team, you knew that this was going to be a bad matchup for them all the way along. And I think you and I were on the same page on this. It's not that I hate the Seahawks or anything like it. You just looked at it and said, this is going to be a tough one for them to win. I do think that they'd have a better shot against San Francisco this week if they had found a way. Mm. If Russell had gotten that last possession and gone down, scored a touchdown, and they win by two, do I think they'd have had a shot? Yeah, I think they'd have had a better shot against the Niners than they did last week against Green Bay. But c'est la vie, that's how it goes. Mm. Look, there are things in sports, Brock, that we can prove with numbers. And I know you've got some analytics.
Dude, look at this.
I see your full page.
Wow, look at that.
Brock, dude, you're intimidating me, please.
Brock has done analytics.
Stop flexing on me with your analytics.
You can do that on a podcast. Nobody cares. You can throw analytics away. It's you can just do it. You can talk numbers all day. It can be boring. It's a podcast. So you've done analytics, and some things in sports we prove that way. There are other things that have nothing to do with numbers. They're just things we know. Mm. They're just things you know as a sports fan. You don't even need to play the game. You're just a sports fan for years and years. There's things you just know about teams and your team and the games in general. And one thing I think we've learned over the years, all of us, is that if your team, in any sport, if your team has a fatal flaw, even if you're a good team, that fatal flaw will eventually rear its head in the worst possible time and in all likelihood end your season. It's just, it's a fact of life. If you've got a bad bullpen, you will probably end up needing your bullpen in a big spot in the playoffs, and that'll cost you. Mm-hmm. If it's infield defense, you're going to make that big error when it matters. If your goalie's not good enough in hockey, guess what's coming in the playoffs? If you can't kill penalties in hockey, if you're a bad rebounder, or your shooting percentage is down, or you fumble, or you throw it, whatever it is.
Mike Leach versus the Huskies in the Apple Cup.
You, whatever it is.
It'll matter.
That which you cannot do will hurt you when you simply can't afford it.
Three words. Ball don't lie.
That's right.
Ball don't lie.
Well, guess what?
Moments.
The Seahawks couldn't rush the passer, and they couldn't cover much of anyone, especially tight ends. Mm. And guess what beat them at the end of the game?
Yes.
They couldn't cover anybody. They couldn't rush the passer. And just to rub it in the face, it was Jimmy Graham getting low for a ball off his shoe tops that Leno Hill couldn't quite tackle him on. And that's what broke them. They got no pressure on Rodgers throughout the entire game other than the incredible moment when the Griffin brothers got their sack. That was awesome. That was one of my favorite moments of the year. That was really, really cool. But other than that, they got no consistent pressure on Aaron Rodgers. And their worst defenders got beat in the secondary in the biggest moments.
Like
they lost.
You'd like to do this, and over the years you've done this a bunch. When you've come in on Mondays, and many times Howdy and Kyle and I look at each other, especially if we were here before you, and be like, ooh, I wonder what kind of mood Salk's going to be in. I wonder how he's going to take this game, right? Because even near the end, after all our years together, there were times where I was just curious how he was going to come in. And you were like, nope, I saw that one coming. Nope, I felt fine about that. Nope. But, you know, and many times it's contrary to what and how others processed and felt about that game. In the second half, in the fourth quarter, did you think the Seahawks were going to win?
I thought they'd have a chance if they could get a stop.
So you were sitting there still with some pretty good, even having said all of that, and the fatal flaw that they had over the course of the season, as you were sitting there, Howdy, where did you...
I mean, I guess what I would say is this. On each of those third downs, I did not think they would get the ball back. But I thought if they somehow could, they would, Russell would go down and do his thing. And I still, we've said this before in other games, I feel deprived of getting a chance to see Russell do his thing.
And it didn't even have to go to overtime for you to feel deprived.
Right. Like, I wanted to see Russ do what he was going to do down five at the end of the game with no, like, didn't you want to see that? Pete somehow kept all of his timeouts.
He did. But,
like, let's just dispense with one. Punting was the right thing to do on 4th and 11.
Yes.
Can we stop anybody who's out there saying they should have gone for it on 4th and 11 inside their own 4? What are you talking about?
Did any of you feel that way?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Not even a little.
No.
3 timeouts and the 2-minute warning.
Yes, it's not close. By some miracle of science, the Seahawks had all 3 of their timeouts and the 2-minute warning, and they actually used them all correctly.
They
actually
still basically allow Green Bay to have 2 first downs and still get the ball back in that situation.
I mean, it was remarkable. They did it all exactly right, and unfortunately, on 3rd and long twice, they were unable to get the stops they needed, but that was absolutely, positively, 100% the right thing to do.
Correct.
And we should have seen Russell Wilson with the ball, maybe even if they got in the first stop, the one where your boy Ugo gets completely turned around 7 ways from Sunday, if he had been able to do that correctly, Russell gets the ball back with a timeout and plenty of time to go down and score a touchdown. I don't know if he would have succeeded or not, but I'll tell you what, if you're a Green Bay fan, you didn't want to see that. You didn't have any interest in Russell Wilson with the ball in his hand.
You'd already
seen that
before.
The game.
Right, you didn't need to see it again.
That's exactly right. The defense couldn't get it done.
No.
Nor could it generally throughout the year. I mean, like, there were moments where we saw, you know, them rise up and or make some stops in the red zone, but their defense wasn't good.
The only thing they did good on defense all season long, I dug into this, okay? I got numbers.
Okay. Let's see them. Hit me with the numbers.
Do you realize there's only one thing they did well?
Analytics me.
Taking the ball away.
In spurts.
Not in the last 4 games.
They did not create one takeaway the last 4 games. But over the course of the season, they ended the year 4th in the NFL in takeaways with 32.
Which is good.
That was the only thing they did well. Honestly, that is the only thing statistically they did well.
What didn't they do well?
They were 27th in yards per play, right next to Arizona, Jacksonville, Miami, and Cincinnati. They were 27th in sack percentage. Right near the bottom, once again, right next to Houston and Detroit and Miami and the Jets. They were 27 in yards per rush. Right, which is the most important is when it comes to stopping the run. How do you do in yards per rush? You were 27th, right next to Cincinnati, Washington, Cleveland, Jacksonville, Carolina. You were last in the second half of the season in red zone touchdown percentage at 78% on the season. You ended 23rd. So let's just bend and not break. And when we get to the red zone, we'll play good defense. Nope, you were 23rd there. You were 18th in third downs. I guess that was decent. You were almost halfway there.
Half of the league.
Yes. Yeah, there's nothing when Pete says in his postmortem, well, you know, there's numbers we liked and we liked our base defense and I would really love to have a cup of coffee with Pete and sit down and say, please tell me the numbers that you're looking at defensively, other than takeaways, which totally came in spurts and he didn't have any in the final 4 most important games of the season. Give me something that you felt good about with this defense, because both my eyes and the numbers say nothing. Nothing. And that was just the terribly frustrating part about it. And here's the other thing that just drives me nuts. Is just continuing to listen to the hammer job of Brian Schottenheimer and Russell Wilson in this conservative offense. Well, what about your conservative defense? Does anybody talk about that?
You just ripped up your analytics?
Yes. Because, by the way, offensively this season, you were in the
inverse.
Now you're
reading off a crumbled piece of paper.
You were in the top 10 in everything offensively and had multiple 1,000-yard receivers and had the 5th leading rusher and the 5th most important quarterback and a quarterback with a career year and a running back with a career year and receivers with career years. All sorts of moving pieces, and you were still top 10 everywhere offensively.
So can you help me? Do you and I just – are we taking crazy pills compared to the rest of Seahawks Nation here?
I listened to a guy named JD yesterday. I went on Toronto radio, right? And they had me on, like, and I'm listening to JD have a hot take, and it was hot. It was a good take. I told him when I got on, I said, bro, you just melted the 7 inches of snow out my garage. That was hot. And it was the same narrative. Schottenheimer, Russell, hamstringing, handcuffing Russell, handcuffing this offense,
so
handcuffing
confused.
Your greatest player. How can you be so conservative?
I mean, we did see a lot of Marshawn Lynch, especially in the first half in Green Bay.
Yeah, but hold on. Green
Who
Bay was
it,
but wait a minute.
Game?
But Green Marshawn Bay was a team. Russell? Hold on. Green Bay was a team that couldn't stop the run all year.
Yeah, you
it
had
looked
no
like they had a fine time stopping the run.
They did, but I didn't think they stuck with it too long. They
Marshawn
went with
had
it.
15 carries, two of which were touchdown runs.
They
looked like he was running in wet concrete. They needed to move on hold to
on
Travis Homer so
I agree with
much
that.
Earlier.
It was too much Marshawn, not enough Travis Homer. But I didn't think that they were stubborn about sticking with their run game in on Sunday in Green Bay. Green Bay had a lousy run defense this year and was much better against the pass. Yeah. They did everything. They're supposed to be a balanced football team, and they made every attempt to be balanced.
They scored 3 points in the first.
Well, it didn't
minutes.
Work. No one's saying it worked, but I didn't think it was all scheme and game plan
well,
and this
Mike,
and that.
If it didn't work, then they stuck with it too long.
Did that?
That's
fe-
how
that,
long.
So that felt like Dallas to you guys? That felt last year
half,
like
yes.
Dallas? Did it really?
The first half, yes. Mm. I wouldn't say as much from an offensive coordinator perspective, but from the fact that you know that there is no way with Marshawn Lynch, Travis Homer, and three offensive linemen that no one else wants, you're going to run the ball. You can't do it. You're not going to be able to do it. The yeah. only chance you had is Russell Wilson.
Even against
win.
Their dime personnel, even when
no
you went
matter
heavy.
What.
I
even
totally
when you put
disagree
the second
with you guys.
Half was that way, and you still
I
had
mean,
success.
What happened? We saw what happened. It was demonstrably they couldn't do it. It was the wrong call.
The offense didn't have one thing to do with them winning or losing that game. Other than the Malik Turner drop, I don't think the offense had
deficit mattered.
Yeah,
yes,
and it was
it
much more
mattered.
On the defense than the offense.
No way.
Defense
didn't
couldn't
get
stop
in
anybody.
The end zone.
Was, once again, the defense
offense,
couldn't stop
score.
Anybody.
The it offense was
seven,
the only reason why that first half didn't work.
It was 7-3 at the end of the first quarter. You drive down, you miss yet another field goal, and the defense went up and gave up touchdown after touchdown after touchdown.
They didn't give up a single touchdown in Philadelphia. Like I know we're talking about Green Bay, but this hasn't been the same thing
after
every
touchdown,
week.
2-1 time of possession for Green Bay versus Seattle in the first half. They had the ball twice as
you
long.
Couldn't
you, think
that
was, you think that was just
ball.
On the offense?
That is mostly your offense because
the
you
best,
cannot hold
the
ball.
Best way to change time of possession is by running the ball. I don't understand what yeah. you guys are talking about. I watched this game,
watch
and I don't even see it. I can't imagine watching that game and pointing at it and saying, you know what the problem here is? The offense just doesn't make any sense the way they run it. It wasn't as good in the first half as the second. Obviously, they were better in the second half. But their defense, in every big moment, failed. Their defense couldn't get it done.
Couldn't take the ball
all year,
couldn't
their defense
get
couldn't
the
get it done.
It couldn't get it done because it literally was not good. There was not
enough
personnel.
All of
it
your
could
personnel.
Not be good.
But you had all your personnel.
Yeah,
all the injuries. All the injuries were on offense.
Everything
not
you
defense.
Just said. All these new linemen. All these pieces out. Four string running back. All right. So you know what? Protect those guys a little right. bit. You have everybody on defense, and yet everybody on defense couldn't do a thing. Couldn't stop them.
Well,
couldn't
hold
take
on,
the
Brock,
ball away.
Let's be fair. Hold on. Ziggy wasn't playing.
They were
I think we all know that without Ziggy in the lineup, they weren't able to go to everything they really wanted
and
to
LJ
do.
And LJ was a healthy scratch.
Right.
Yes, I got it.
Right. So let's be fair. Yes. I mean, you know, without Ziggy, it's really hard for that yes. defense to function
what
the way it wanted
expect?
To.
I mean, you gave up 6 third downs of 3rd and 7+. You gave up 9 of 14 third downs.
Oh, no, that sounds shoddy.
Yeah.
He's supposed to have a plan for them to not give up 3rd and long over and over. And, what does Marshawn say? And over and over and over.
And over and over.
Yeah.
And that, over and over.
Where was the chicken in this game, as Marshawn apparently now likes to say? It was on the Seahawks' 3rd down defense, which got no pressure on the quarterback whatsoever and couldn't cover squat in the defensive backfield. Trey Flowers had an atrocious game. Lano Hill, Brock, can we address? I got a bunch of questions. Maybe we can
You're
start
gonna
with
You're going to finally
this
get your answer. Brock has been evading this answer for 3 days.
Right, can we bring people in? Can we bring
Please
people
bring
in? Should I just read
no,
from the train?
Don't read. Don't we read. Never read verbatim.
Okay, I won't read.
What are you
the
talking
moment
about?
The game ends,
yes.
I say to our, it's the four of us on a thread.
On the text.
On a
thread.
Text thread.
Really?
You didn't see my
why
guess
is,
four times.
Why is Lano Hill playing in that spot? Brock's like, well, because
Lano's bad.
Blair's hurt and Lano did this wrong. Like, I understand that Lano did it wrong. Why is he in the game? Well, because what you don't understand is that he needs to be more aggressive on that play.
Yes.
No, I get that. Answer my question.
What?
Why is Lano in the game on the two biggest 3rd downs of the year?
Yeah, because Marquise Blair was inactive with an ankle injury.
Not a good enough reason.
He's playing time. You didn't
Why isn't it Akeem King?
So because he was not playing that position. He was not playing
That's
safety.
That's not a
Akeem King is a
Hold
corner
on. No
and a
one's
nickel.
Playing safety. This is a dime package. He's not playing safety. He's playing defensive back. He's playing dime corner.
They chose Leno Hill all week. He's going to be, if Blair is out Wednesday with an ankle, this is our starter at this position in this package.
He's their starter at dime.
Yes, in that game.
You'll have to explain to me then, Brock, why, if you need that many corners and secondary people on the field at the same time, why is it Big Nickel with Leno freaking Hill instead of quite literally anybody else on the roster?
Mike, if
they had taken Brock, DJ Fluker, and put him at safety or at dime instead of Leno Hill, would the results have been appreciably different?
I'd have gone Ben Burkervin in that moment.
The answer is no.
The Patriots learned that lesson when they put Gronk at safety, Mike. It's too risky.
Well, but nothing could have gone worse than it did.
And as furthermore, we've heard all year, too much base, too much base, too much base, too much base.
Too much
now
Leno.
Now dime with the game on the
Here's
line.
Dime.
Go, well, what are they doing? Why are they base
hold
defense?
On. Hold oh on. I never said too much base. That was not me.
I never said
too much base. You said too much base. I want to know why Leno Hill was in the game at the end of the game. Why is he in?
Because the answer really is that they literally do not have defensive talent.
I'd have rather seen Akeem King. I'd have rather seen KJ Wright. I'd have rather seen more linebackers. I'd have rather rushed the passer. Did Clowney even rush on that last third down?
It's third and nine.
He was a drop back guy in the middle.
Yeah, he dropped back. He faked like he was going to go after him and he dropped back.
Well, I get it. Anytime you have the opportunity to let Puna Ford rush the passer, you have to take it. What are we doing? What is happening? How you guys want to
Shoddy,
talk about
dude.
The
it's Shoddy's fault, bro.
What
why
are we
did
doing,
Shoddy
Mike?
Play dime?
How
what
much
the heck?
How much of the defense was scheme and how much is personnel?
60%, 65% personnel, 35% scheme. 65% of their issues is they just frankly are not talented and didn't develop.
Okay, so if you are looking to make replacements this offseason, which people on defense are you looking to upgrade?
Every level of your defense has starters to be found. When you're 27th and you're in the bottom five in the league, and just about every stat that matters to me is I look at it, right? In yards per play, in yards per rush, in sack percentage, in third, like in the game today, how you got to play defense, every level of your defense needs significant violence and significant speed and significant starters coming in.
Where are your priorities?
My priorities would be absolutely on that defensive line. You ended the year in the regular season with Rasheem Green as your leading sacker. Do you know where
he
ranked
in the playoffs, though?
He did. He got, I think he fell
was
into
it on that last play.
He fell into a sack in Philadelphia. Did nothing in the Green Bay. Absolutely Velcro most of the time. He was your leading sacker during the regular season with four.
Okay.
Do you know where that singularly ranked in the NFL amongst all the NFL
amongst
leaders?
All sack leaders?
Amongst all sack
I'm
leaders.
32nd.
Individually.
Yes. 52.
Individually. Like not per
How
team.
Many people had more
How many
sacks
people
than
had
four?
More sacks? Where was he? Where were his four sacks in the league? Where did that rank individually?
I mean, it might be in the hundreds.
It was 95th.
Yeah, I'm pretty close.
It was 95th was your leading sacker. There were secondary
they
members
spread it out,
with more.
They
no,
spread it out.
They all had they four or less. The San Francisco 49ers, their four starters, including Dee Ford, who missed significant time. Dee Ford, DeForest Buckner, Eric Armstead, and Bosa, every one of them had more than six
Did every
sacks.
One of them have a game with four?
Every one of
well,
them.
Well, that's unfair. The Niners invested first-round picks
they
in D-line.
Yes, they did.
No, wait, never.
That's mean. That's
oh, my
bad. That's really,
well, that's right.
That's really unnecessary. The Niners invested, like, top five picks on D-line, man.
That's true.
I mean, they're to be fair, there is a little bit of a difference.
So
there
how
is.
Many starting off? How many starting defensive linemen do you think the Seahawks need to add next year? Two? Three?
Are you going to let Jaron Reed go? He's a free agent, right? You can let Jaron Reed go?
I'm certainly not paying top of market for Jaron Reed.
Is Puna Ford a starter?
He's here. Yeah, I think he plugs a role.
Yeah.
I think Al Wood, you know, they find that other guy. Al Wood's had a decent season.
He's fine. Yep. I think Quentin Jefferson's a rotational guy. If he's your backup who can help you out at both inside and outside.
Yes.
Like, I thought he showed this
he's
year.
Your
that
fifth
he's
or sixth
he's
lineman.
An NFL player.
Yes.
But after that, I don't think Rasheem Green is maybe he's rotational, but other than that, I don't think he's much of anything.
You better pay Jadeveon $22 million.
Are you ready to
he's
do that?
He's your best player to me. If you said point blank this year, and I know Bobby was first team All Pro, and you know, and he said he may not play in the Pro Bowl. He's got some injuries, some cleanup stuff. I think he was playing through some injury this year and was a warrior to be there and was a great
tackler.
He was
tackler. Sort of limping after one of those
but
touchdowns.
Your best defensive player to me this year was Jadeveon Clowney, and it wasn't close. Mm-hmm. So you better take care of him and get him done creatively and absolutely reward him as you did Sherman, as you did Earl, as you did Cam, as you did Bobby, those guys that you believe in, he has
you
to
think
be
he wants
paid.
To be here? He said what? He's looking for a contender, wants to win a Super Bowl. You think he believes in the culture
well,
here?
I think he's
going to
say, you know what? What else are you going to do on this defense? Because this defense is pretty sorry this year. If we're all going to be honest, we're pretty sorry on
but
this
But he's
side
also,
of the ball.
If he's smart, going to look at it and say, how many quarterbacks have a better shot of winning every year than Russell Wilson?
We were sorry on this side of the ball, and we still won 12 games, and that dude is amazing.
Now, what if Baltimore makes him an offer? The one thing that you just can't help, there's a few other quarterbacks in Russell's league. What if Baltimore says, hey, we'd like you to come here and be part of this defense?
Yep.
I mean, he may just say, yeah, sorry. Like, that's awesome. I want to be a part of that. They got a better defense, and they got Lamar Jackson, who's ascending, and this and that. So you may not even have a shot.
So there's not even a guarantee.
No, there's not. But I agree with you. I would bring back Clowney, and then I'm just investing. I was telling Jake and Stacy today, I was chatting with them, like, they with all their – what did you say, Howdy, $60
million? $60 million in cap space.
Is that after signing Clowney?
No.
If you cut a couple guys,
If you cut a couple guys, but sign Clowney, you still have $60
million. Yeah, you have 57, something like that.
They probably have to spend about 50 of that million on the defense.
Ugh.
And they need to spend like 10 of their 12 picks on the defense, too.
Ugh, no.
Like, I'm not touching – I've heard you talking about A.J. Green and this and that. You can have him. I don't want to be part of that stuff. I am not doing anything to this offense short of maybe looking for some new offensive linemen. I'm not investing on the outside. I'm not investing in running backs. I'm not investing. No way. Tight ends. Like, nope. Give me some more guys who can block. If there's something to be had, like a legitimate center who I mean, look what the center did in Buffalo this year and the difference. What's his? Is that Mitch Morse?
Mitch Morse.
Look at the difference Mitch Morse made in Buffalo to that whole team.
Loved coming
I know.
Out of college.
Yep. I mean, like there's a couple. He went to Kansas City.
Oh, by
City,
the way,
right,
Chase Winovich. Remember, I liked him last year.
Pretty good.
Yeah,
year.
He had 5.5 sacks.
Right. So, like, there are. This is not about you being smart. This is about what the Seahawks need
so,
to do.
Do you remember Chase Winovich?
Yes.
Yeah,
no,
I like
aware.
Chase Winovich.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And actually, do you know that guy Harold Landry that I liked out of Boston College that you said every Boston College player sucks? I think he had 9.5 sacks.
No.
I think he doubled. Yeah, I think he doubled.
I don't believe that. You don't get a DC.
Oh,
D-lineman.
You know what? Bruce Irvin had 8.5. Bruce.
True?
Yeah. No, Bruce. Yeah, Bruce had 8.5 this year. Rasheem had 4.
How many did Ziggy have?
Bruce Irvin had 8.5.
How many did Ziggy have?
I think he had 1.5.
It too much? It was obviously too much Marshawn in the game. Would you have gone to Travis Homer
I
earlier?
Would have,
yeah, I think so too.
I think yes.
Okay. Should they have punted on 4th and 11? I think
we've
covered that one. No. How do you view this season? When you go back and kind of look at the 2019 season, what will be your kind of
I was sitting
takeaway?
Outside. Part of the reason I didn't get back to that text stream is I said to myself before the game, I'm going to be positive. All right? I'm not going to give these jackals anything to talk about on that podcast. And boy, was I wrong.
Answer my question.
And boy, was I ever wrong on that.
Would have been nice to just answer.
I was sitting outside in my new outdoor space that I think you guys will come over and enjoy at some point for some game. And because, I said to the family, I'm going to be good. And I was for the first quarter. And I said, you know what? I think it'd be best for Dad to just go outside. If you're more than welcome to come out if you want to. I'm just going to be outside and enjoying the game and enjoyed that. And I sat there, Mike, at like the end of the third quarter and in the fourth quarter. And I think I even tweeted about it. And the joy that we all felt when this team won a Super Bowl will never be replaced. Mm-hmm. You've said that. That first one, there's never anything like it.
Never.
That first Super Bowl, that
Although
joy.
I'll tell you. The joy in the NFC Championship game when Jermaine Kearse catches that ball.
It was insane.
It's
it was
pretty
off
close.
The charts. Yeah.
It's pretty darn close and shows you what it could have been if they had found a way, especially the way it would have happened.
But is this
the next
team
year.
And I think it was maybe even after the Griffin Brothers sack, right? And to watch that moment and to see DK's unbelievable catch at the back tip of that football, that rocket shot, and to see Lockett continue to do what he does, and to see Russell just I think I said on a tweet, since that maybe NFC Championship as far as pride. Like, I am just stinking proud of these dudes.
It's so weird.
They are battling their butts off.
Have you ever been as proud of a group that you just spent 25 minutes destroying as this one?
No.
It's
never.
Bizarre. And,
never.
And I know that you're going to find another guy on the ferry with your sign pointing to you to say, I'm Brock Heward, talk to me. Like, somebody else is going to come over to you and tell you you're too mean and negative and cynical about this team. Look what they accomplished.
Correct.
They won to the second round of the playoffs and this and that. And they're right. We are too negative about this team.
Yep.
Their resilience is incredible. Their bond and what they've done to make the whole bigger than the sum of its parts has been remarkable. And in many ways, Pete's best coaching job, which is why I don't want to hear anything about the coaching on this team. I just don't think it was the problem. Any problem in scheme was more than outweighed by what they did outplaying their ability and talent level.
Yes.
So I'm not blaming one coach on this team. other than for their inability to, like, you know, call plays on time. But that's not that good. Like, they just, at no point were they that good, and we talked about it all year long. We were marveling. How do they do this? Every week we come in and say the same thing. How do they win again? They're a 2-14 team without Russell Wilson. The answer is Russell Wilson is that good, mm-hmm. and the combination of Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson have provided such an incredible sense of team unity that they were able to be as resilient as we've talked about and outlive their ability level. It's incredible.
It's a blend of two of my life experiences. Well, one of my own and one in hearing from Damon. When they went and won that first Super Bowl in New England.
Preferring to be announced as a team.
Damon said he and Bledsoe were below the goalposts the day before as they were in the Superdome. Was that in the Superdome?
Mm-hmm.
And sitting there looking out at this ragtag crew going, dude, how are we even here? This is one of the worst talent teams. Like, this team, talent-wise...
History's, by the way, shown that not entirely to be true.
To a degree.
The defense on that team was pretty darn talented.
The defense grew up to be pretty mature.
Damon and Tom and Drew, like all quarterbacks, were only looking on the offensive skill side, and we're like, yeah, we don't really have any skill position guys.
How are we possibly here? Because their offensive weaponry was, whoa.
Right.
It was zero. But put it all together, the sum of all of those amazing parts led to one of the most amazing Super Bowl wins against the greatest show on turf. So there's that side of it that I think the Seahawks were. And then when I went to Indy in my first mini camp, I'm like, how are these guys 12-4? I'm looking at this O-line like, ugh. I mean, I just came from Hutch and Walt and Tobeck and like, man, a bunch of like Sean Alexander, like the talent level, it's not even close. I know Marvin is super special and Edge is amazing, but what Peyton does to make everybody so much better and to cover all the ills of so many others.
Then the answer to all to these questions are all the same, right? What do all three of those teams have in common? Yeah, they all had great coaches. They all had great chemistry. They three of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Correct.
Yeah, I and no shot at Damon. I'm sure Damon did look out there and be like, man, I couldn't do anything with this team. Nope, you couldn't.
Yep.
And that's not a shot at Damon, who's a great guy and a good quarterback in his own right.
Yep.
He's not Tom Brady.
Nope.
He's not Peyton Manning.
Nope.
And he's not Russell Wilson.
No, sir.
And those three guys are perfectly capable of looking at a roster that is nowhere near complete enough to win as much as it should and elevate it to the next level.
Yes. Now, I, like you, feel you've got enough pieces coming back offensively, that you've got Chris Carson, that you've got DK and Tyler. This is the best I have ever felt as a season ends, pushing ahead to the next 3 years. I think you've got 3 years of Russell's prime still,
mm-hmm.
where he's still going to be able to run when he has to, not like he used to, but when he has to, can still do what he's going to be capable of doing the next 3 years. He's got a DK Metcalf who's unlike any toy he's ever had in 10 years.
Did DK get bigger before the Green Bay game, by the way? He looked bigger in that game. I don't know how. There was something, like he was running slants
meaner.
And stuff. I feel like he just looked bigger.
I don't want to mess with him.
Grown man. And Lockett is phenomenal. And those two, you got 3 years. And Disley.
Credit to DK, his hands improved. He used to have real bad hands. Not real bad, but he'd drop a lot of balls.
That's cool.
Catch in Green Bay
He obviously gave his hands to Malik Turner.
Will Disley is a tremendous tight end that I hope can stay and play a complete season at some point in his career. I think he's good. Their young offensive linemen were the most positive that we've had in 10. Like, there's pieces there. And, oh, by the way, you've got a draft with receivers and running backs that is sick. Sick with speed, sick with talent. Somebody in that second or third round, if you want to have a luxury pick after spending your money and your capital and other resources defensively, that could come in here and also grow and be an amazing threat. So offensively, I feel great. Defensively, you got a ton of work.
You need a shutdown corner.
Yes.
So that Shaquille Griffin is your second corner, which he'd be great at.
Yep.
I would feel so good at Shaquille Griffin as my second corner and allow Trey Flowers to be an extra piece.
Yes.
Give me a number one corner. Remember we were talking about our favorite Stapon
Guyamore?
Yeah, well, it turns out he's a number one corner, and that was actually the type of player they needed to add.
Yep.
Give me, as much as I've always liked Bradley McDougal, it's time.
Stapon Guyamore.
There he is.
Stapon Guyamore.
It's time to move on from Bradley McDougal.
I love
or
how you try to act like that was somebody else, by the way.
You think it was me?
Yeah, I love how you try to act like that was some other voice, dude. That's good. You pull that trick.
Yeah, you sure do a great impression of that, Mike. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Boy, oh, you know that guy? That guy that says,
Danny.
I see. Turnabout is fair play over here. Yes. I get it. Yeah. I can handle that.
You're welcome.
Brad McDougal mm-hmm. as who was it?
He's a great third.
Al Michaels wanted to call him Brad.
Nice play by Brad McDougal.
He's a great third safety on a Super Bowl contending team.
He's not a starting safety anymore, and I loved what he did for a few years. But you need a star at that position.
You need someone running 4-4, blowing fools up.
And I think Quandre Diggs is probably going to be back here for another couple of years.
Oh, he sure is.
Two more years.
And hopefully Bradley McDougal's the backup to both those guys, and Lano Hill is working construction somewhere. Like and same with Tedrick Thompson. Those guys aren't NFL players.
XFL.
Maybe.
Yes.
They're not NFL players. They play wherever they want, but not in the NFL, not here in Seattle.
Need some more time. They just need more time.
Yeah, they don't. No. They don't have it. They're not good enough, those two guys. So I want to see an addition at safety and an addition at corner. And if you have to go spend money on those guys, I'm fine with it. By the way, you also probably need to replace KJ Wright. You got one more year out of him, and it's time. And not that KJ had a bad year, but you need one of these young bucks who's able to really do something special in that spot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time to find some people on the outside who can rush the passer.
Yes.
Clowney on one side and get somebody legitimate on the other side who can rush opposite.
Well, it's interesting.
What are we doing?
As you were sitting there watching that game thinking, okay, who just construction-wise would you have rather had? Now, it was hard, and this also is why I agree with Pete as far as this feeling like 2012, more so than any of the last 7 years after it, right? Because of what you have available resources-wise, what you have in this draft with 11 dudes, you're not stuck. Like you've been the last few with salary cap and last year totally stuck with no draft picks. So you had to make the move you did. But as you sat there and you watched Green Bay with the two Smith brothers, right? Those were two moves that they made. Yes. And they paid, what is it, Zadarius? They paid him a number
million.
That you would.
It was worth it.
Oh, yes. And in dollars in the next few years, it's going to be cheap. Like they made that business decision that's the way we're going to go about it. Seahawks were stuck. They were not in that same situation. They did not have that money to begin free agency, right? They had to get Russell.
But
they had to trade Frank. Yes, they do. So now is this year. If this is 2012, remember what you did in 2012. You got Averill and Bennett.
Yep.
You just played the Green Bay Packers who got two Smiths, right? Who got 12.5 and 10.5 sack. Like you have to fill that hole and you got to do it in a hurry.
Yeah. If you can do those three things. I think you're right back
You're going to be right back in.
And linebacker's probably the least of the three. If you can come up with a starting safety, a star caliber starting safety, a legitimate number one corner who bumps Shaquille to the number two spot, and a legitimate rushing threat, a guy who's a 10-plus sack guy, I think you're right there.
Is it time,
by the way? I honestly think you're right there.
And we have 100 days until the NFL draft, so I'm going to guess we're going to have a few podcasts to talk about this. But with 100 days to go, is it time to finally find a corner that takes the ball away in college? A kid with incredible ball skills that you say, you know what? We have trained and adapted. We've done all of this and the kick step and stay over the top. But I will in 100 days for sure.
You got one right now?
Nah, not right now.
Really?
Nah, not right now.
You don't have a guy?
I kind of like that true freshman for LSU last night. I think he's going to be a really good one in the years to come. But how about just finding a guy that we don't have to grow him to take the ball away. We don't have to just say, I'll play over the top. That this kid actually can take
the
ball away.
Just don't overthink the room. Just go out and get somebody great.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and maybe this will be the year they trade up for something. They got a lot of picks. They've got a lot of money. Maybe it is time to trade up instead of trading back. And I know Belichick's always the model. Well, guess what? On the right occasion, Belichick would trade up when he thought that he had the right guy and needed the right thing. So, yeah, we'll see. We have a lot of time to talk about the drafts, not till the end of April, but there's a lot of work, I believe, to be done specifically on defense, and that's where I'd get it started. All right, we got to talk some NFL because Seahawks weren't the only team playing. Brock has – I know you didn't need to tease anything during a podcast, but what you told me as we were walking in here about the Pac-12 – might be the funniest thing, the funniest potential story you've ever told me. We'll do that in a little bit as well. All right, continuing on, Brock, and go Titans. Let me just say that. Whew. Go Titans. With the Seahawks out, I can't even, like...
And go Hawks.
Seahawks fans can't watch the NFC Championship game, right? It's going to be just terrible to watch.
And go Hawks.
How do you determine who to root for?
Yeah, no thanks.
Right? Like... Niners and Sherman and his
The Niners are
going to
win.
Rant.
Let's just be clear. The Niners are going to win.
They probably are.
They're going to probably beat them by double digits.
Did you catch Aaron Rodgers postgame, too, when he made his little snide comment about Jimmy? It's just gross. Did you catch it?
I missed that.
As soon as the game ended, he was on the field with, must have been Aaron Andrews.
Yes.
And she was asking about the game. He's like, oh, yeah, it was great. And just maybe even a little sweeter to get it for Jimmy since he used to play for that it was Jimmy that won it. You're just like, oh God. Like, he's just, he's, he's really an obnoxious person when he plays for the other team.
Yes.
He gets under your skin, and yes, he was not what I needed in that very moment. Guy was feeling pretty gracious, like, yeah, all right, well, it was a fun run, and Seahawks lost to a better team. And then Rodgers comes in and just twists the knife. You're like, dude, you're a jerk. Don't say that. Like, that's really unnecessary.
He's going to take a pounding. He's that San Fran crew is teed up. They're ready to go. They were the Seahawks in 13.
Sherman the Super Bowl for 2 weeks. What was with Sherm post game too?
Yeah.
Ranting and raving, and nobody respects me. Everybody respects you.
You're just all pro.
You're really good. It's not that they don't respect you, Richard. It's that many of them don't like you.
Yes.
They believe that you're great. You had a great pick in that game. You take the ball away from teams as well as anybody. You've done a great job in every part of being a corner.
Mm-hmm.
You're just obnoxious.
Yeah, great year after a bad year. Good for you. Yeah, you made your incentives this year. Great. You didn't the year before. Great. Like, he just has to always have the last word.
He does. Ugh. He really does. Hey, good for him, though. He's probably going to be in the Super
Rodgers
Bowl here in a couple
just
days.
Body language is...
Can you come back to the Titans for a minute? Because they, to me, are the most interesting story of getting to these final four teams. How do they beat Baltimore? How do they do that?
No idea.
I mean, because they didn't just beat them. They got up on them.
How did they beat them? They beat them handled.
They owned them.
Yep.
They absolutely owned them. Is there a blueprint to be taken out of that?
Well, they were more violent than Baltimore, which is, we sat here last week and I thought it would be pretty chalky. I thought the divisional round would be really chalky. I thought everybody, and you know, most of the national folks kind of thought that way as well. And the one that they thought maybe close was the Seahawks, which it was close.
Yeah.
But Tennessee
it was the only one score game, once again.
Was the shocker. I mean, they went in there and, sorry, Earl. I know Earl Thomas was tweeting all week about how, you know, nobody hits King Henry like we're going to hit King Henry.
Did he make a business decision a little bit in the secondary, too?
He kind of got swatted one time.
Just get out of my way, you gnat.
55,000 likes on Twitter that I saw the last time I looked at that. Yeah. But they went in and they hit the bully right in the mouth, which I don't think any of us anticipated you could do. Not that Baltimore team, not that team with the bye, actually a two-week bye. They didn't hardly play their guys. They didn't have to the last week. They had it all wrapped up. And that crew, unfortunately, they hadn't been there. Earl hadn't been there as a Raven. Lamar hadn't been in that spot as a Raven, right? Those guys had not, Ingram had not been there with the Ravens. Like, that crew has not been there. They just thought, ooh, we're going to come in and we're the bullies. And we're going to smack these dudes around, and they're going to come off of an emotional high and beating Tom Brady and winning New England. They're going to be flat. We're going to hit them. We're going to smack them. We're going to get up on them. We're going to make Ryan Tannehill one-dimensional and slaughter that dude. And Mike Vrabel and King Henry had a very different plan, and they got up, and they got the fumble, and they got the pick, and they got ahead, and that bully was left backpedaling over and over and over again.
Is Derrick Henry the player in this league that when you watch him, you're the most
mesmerized.
Excited about? Compared to how little he's talked about.
Mm.
Because I think that game featured two of those. Lamar Jackson, every time he is on screen, he lights it up, man. He's so fun. Patrick Mahomes is so fun. Russell Wilson is so – I mean, there's a lot of guys in the
league. Sean Watson's really fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, when they get the ball, you're just, oh, my God. But most of them are talked about all the time like that. I don't think we talk about Derrick Henry nearly enough.
No, Christian McCaffrey gets a lot more even putt.
Sure.
And he does it as a receiver and a runner. But you're talking about the leading rusher in the league with 1,500 yards.
And by the way, they throw him screens. They didn't catch passes like McCaffrey does. But when they throw him screens, good luck.
It's also because you're not supposed to be as twitchy when you're that big. I was telling somebody, Eddie George, when Eddie George came out of school, you remember Eddie George out of Ohio State?
Sure.
Not the Eddie George that had been run down and had like 6,000 carries on his legs, but the Eddie George, when he first came out, you're like, that's not right. You're not supposed to be that fast and that big.
Where do you think Eddie George was on that list of the top 11 college players of all time?
Well,
the most recent.
Out of the Nissan Heisman.
The most recent one was Barry Sanders. What?
How's that possible?
I don't know.
Who put that list? Did Gil Brandt put that list
there
together?
Were players on that list.
It's like the NFL top 100. It was like a bunch of 80.
I went through the 11. I'd only seen 9 of them play. And I'm 41 years old. I had only seen 9 of them play.
Only 41?
I'm only 41.
So you're 42.
I'd only seen I think it was 9 of the 11 I'd seen play.
Yeah.
And then like
goofy.
A bunch others that I'd barely seen.
Usually when you're a 6'3", 240-pound running back, you have a forward lean and, you know, you get what's there and you can kind of impose your will physically on people, but you're not supposed to be laterally quick. You're not supposed to stiff arm and sprint away from people. You're not supposed to be twitchier and more sudden and faster than guys smaller.
Yeah.
That guy is something else.
That's Adrian Peterson, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of Adrian Peterson there. He's bigger, I think, taller. Than Adrian Peterson was. Yes. And more physical.
And
maybe
to be
not
fair on why he's not maybe on everyone's radar this year, he had 2 years, his first 2 years of his career, he didn't even eclipse 750 yards rushing.
Mostly because of injury, though, right?
He played in 15 games his first year, 16 his second, 16 his third, 16 his... He's played every game. It's just the last 2 years he's been any good.
Well, and he plays in the AFC South. Yes. Right. He's taken on the Titans.
And it took
Titans
him a little while to build that
Colts,
line.
10 a.m.
That.
CBS.
That's a great
Nobody's
point.
Watching.
That's a great point. That's all good points. Will Lamar Jackson have more years like this one, or is this the best it's going to be? Is this the zenith for Lamar Jackson?
Oh, he got an opportunity to. I think in this league, that's a quality organization with a lot of great people and a supporting cast around him. And he's in the right spot, and that's why I feel a little bit for Joe Burrow, and I think we'll talk some college football maybe in our next segment, but he's going to go to Cincinnati and have to battle the Ravens and battle the Steelers, and just, yeah, I think they're a quality organization that, you know, was able to have Joe Flacco for a decade and won a Super Bowl with him, and yeah, I think this is not a one-hit wonder. I do, and am still concerned about his style of play and the physicality of it, and unfortunately, that moment was surprisingly big for him. To see him struggle, to see him fumble, to see him throw a couple picks, Mike. You actually, I think, mentioned that last week, right? I think in our podcast last week, you said, hold on a second. I'm not just ready to crown the Ravens, because that dude the year before nearly got benched for Joe Flacco in a playoff game.
Yeah, he's kind of 0-2 and having a good game. Now, he didn't have a bad game in this one. I mean,
they scored 12 points.
They did a good job, though, of forcing him turnovers. To do what he didn't want to do.
That's right.
And he didn't really have the weapons to do it.
Yep.
He's not...
Mike Vrabel's pretty good.
He's very good. I get a little torn with Lamar Jackson. He's a good enough passer. He's not a running quarterback who can't pass.
But he's not
the strength of his game
passer.
Is not his ability to.
And I hope
to
he,
wind up and throw it.
And I hope
times.
He works his fundamentals. There's a reason, you know, the guy that works in our building works with Russell. That Russell has said, I need a QB coach. Mm. I need to be trained. I need to continue to have work. I need to be evaluated. I hope that Lamar looks at that tape and looks at the season and doesn't just go, man, I got this league figured out.
No.
I'm the MVP, but actually works on his fundamental. He got
You're
fundamental
saying
weaknesses.
Russell gets trained by Groz? What do you say?
No,
what
the guru. The guru.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
The guru who trains.
Well,
him.
And speaking of MVPs, last year's MVP reminded everybody why he was that. And maybe the league slept on the Chiefs all year. They didn't have a great year. They disappointed a little bit. Jeez. But, man, they just turned on the Jets. You ever seen anything like what they did in the second quarter of that game? Just
that
like,
is
peace.
I would love to put Mahomes and his guys up against the greatest show on turf. Right now, they got to play in a dome and they got to play on turf. And Oz Akeem and Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce and even Ricky Prohl, they could all run Marshall Faulk. But you put those speedsters with the Chiefs, Sammy and Tyreek and even Kelsey at tight ends and what's the kid's name? Hardman?
Mecole Hardman.
My gosh. You put those dudes out there with Mahomes throwing it, that is speed extraordinary.
I think I'll take Mahomes over Warner, but I'll take the Rams receivers over the Chiefs ones. Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt were really
good.
Awesome. People don't
no,
shouldn't
they were
forget
awesome.
Just how good those guys were. So
They're gonna win, right? It's gonna be San Fran, Kansas City?
I will be rooting for Tennessee.
It'll be San Fran and Kansas.
It probably will be. But you know what? I don't sleep on Tennessee.
Well,
man.
I mean, here's
don't sleep on them again.
If you're
because
Tennessee,
because if you're Tennessee and you get up again the way they did, they have the ability to punch another team right in the face.
Shorten the game.
They can do it.
Squeeze it like a boa constrictor.
That's right.
And that's a really easy flight from Nashville to Kansas City. And, you know, it's a full 8 days, right? They played on Saturday, so they get even an extra day of recovery. And if you're a Tennessee Titan, and Mike Vrabel, you know, is using this. Listen, we went up to Belichick land and Brady land and beat them in New England.
Yeah, that team's
and
not
then
nearly
we
as good
went
as the
and
Chiefs
beat
are,
the
though.
Number the best team in the league, the number one seed in all of this.
They're certainly capable of it. I would say both games this week could go either way, but I think I understand why you're taking chalk. Heading into it. All right, Brock, you told me one of the funniest things I've heard in a while. I can't wait to talk about this here in just a sec. Well, Brock, is it still happening? I was going to say that the college football playoff championship game is over, but I'm not sure. Is it? Is it over or is it still going? Depending on when you're listening to this podcast, we're recording this on Tuesday midday. It may or may not still be happening. 4.5 hours to settle that thing.
Four weeks after the semi.
This is like cricket.
Yes.
Remember our old this ain't cricket?
Yes.
College football is now turned into cricket.
Yeah.
Played over many moons and fortnights. What are they doing?
The Seahawks and Packers, much like the Seahawks and Eagles, had 9 possessions each in their game. 9 possessions each. How many possessions did LSU last night have.
So 18 total?
Yeah.
18 total possessions.
18 total possessions.
How many total
both in the Eagles-Seahawks game and the Packers-Seahawks game?
Kyle, any guesses?
Clemson-LSU last night had how many total possessions?
Combined between the two teams? Mm-hmm.
I don't accept the premise of the question under the guise that I'm not sure the game is over. I think they may still be playing.
I was going to say like 35.
Each team had 15 possessions, 30 total.
Compared to 18.
Correct. So
that's
there's
an
your
additional
there's,
12.
There's your additional hour and a half of football.
It's a lot.
Instead of 3 hours.
And by the way,
four and a half.
That's a game where the end of it wasn't in doubt. So you didn't get the like the tension back and forth clock stoppages that happen at the end of a game. That was a blowout.
Was that the
and
greatest?
It took 4.5 hours.
You're 41, you said? You may not have known any of the greatest individual college football players. Hadn't been alive for their tenure other than Barry Sanders. Was that the greatest college football team that we have seen in our lifetime? You look at what they did and their resume, and they end up beating
0-1 Miami, or what was that Miami team?
They end up beating 6 top 10 teams.
Yeah.
They end up beating a team that had won 29 in a row. They end up having the number one pick and the Heisman Trophy winner and the number one O-line and the Jim Thorpe Award winner and the Biletnikoff Award winner. And, I mean, did we just watch at 15-0 last night the greatest college football team of any of our lifetime? Because I think that's where the conversation is. That's the esteem that they're going to be in the air. They're going to be held in with what they got done.
We probably didn't.
Yes.
just probably not. Okay. Maybe, but probably not.
I'll rep the U. That one backfield had Willis McGahee, Clinton Portis, Frank Gore.
Yep.
Our team was stacked.
I don't know. Doesn't time have to eventually tell you on these things?
It does.
Once you find out what all those guys go on to do.
And a lot of them are going to go on and have long NFL careers and be a lot of difference makers.
Yeah,
some good dudes on that field.
Seemed fine. I don't know. They seemed fine. The game was super boring. Considering you had so many great players in it, and considering how good the games were last month when they played the playoff game,
that was last year, Mike.
Last year, you're right. It was last year. I thought that game was super boring, Howdy. The first half was fine. Second half was super boring.
I thought the second half was a little bit boring.
Fourth quarter lost steam. But it's 17-7.
Fourth quarter turned off. The third quarter was boring.
The first half was very, very
good.
Interesting.
It started off great. Yeah. And I love with it. They're playing field position and getting down inside the four, a little punting battle. That was actually kind of fun to watch.
Big plays, big hits.
Yeah. And then because it was balanced off with the big plays, big hits, great receivers, awesome quarterbacks. And then it just kind of all went to, you know what?
It was just Joe Burrow's story and Ed Orgeron and the amazing story of that team of destiny. Not surprised to see them win. I think just about everybody thought they would in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And they end up doing. And I think, I'm
looking for a good story.
Huh?
I'm looking for a good game.
Yeah.
Sorry. I think in that moment, I need a good game more than I need a good
story. Certainly over 4.5 hours.
Most movies aren't 4.5 hours.
So the thing that I told you, Saul, that you're all excited to talk about is I was on a radio show a couple weeks ago and maybe even less than that. And our buddies down at the Arizona Sports Station, and they brought up that there had been some rumblings or at least some thought. What if the Pac-12 were to actually lose some teams?
Come on.
What if this is getting to such dire straits?
Wazoo's not going to the Big Sky.
No. Not even that. No, not that conversation.
Isn't that why Rolovich came?
Nope.
He's gonna engineer the move to the Big Sky.
Eastern Washington.
Nope. This isn't shrinking, to help their financial pie.
This is teams opting out. Wood.
Yeah, this is team just like this.
So this is more of the USC-UCLA saying, hey, you know what? We're good. Let's go join the Big 12.
This is looking as college football landscape and the whole deal in the years ahead. And where is this thing going? And, what has the SEC done? And what has the Big 10 done? And what can we possibly do to compete with those teams? I had a friend of mine legitimately ask a question. And I asked it in the room that I was in that had a lot of college football people in it last night watching that game and including a former coach, and I said, hey, if the Pac-12 first and second team, the all-conference Pac-12 team, played Clemson or LSU last night, are we confident that the all-conference Pac-12 team wins?
Confident? No, not at all confident. Could they make it a
Hold
game?
On.
Could they compete? Yeah.
The all-conference Pac-12 team against LSU?
Yes.
They lose by 25 points. They're not in the game. They're not in the game.
They're in the game.
No, they're not.
Clemson lost by
25 points. They're worse than Clemson and LSU. They get their doors blown off.
Yeah, I don't know.
They get their doors blown off by Ohio State, Clemson, and Alabama, and LSU, and Georgia. They all blow their doors off. It's not a game. Not a game. Really? Not a game.
The Oregon that beat Oregon that beat Wisconsin.
Not a game.
And Wisconsin that was up on Ohio State in the championship game in the second half. Not a game.
Not a game.
Not a game.
Not a game.
It's absolutely
a not game. A game. Yeah. Not
you,
a game.
You take the All-Stars absolutely a game, but to at least have to even question
you mean is it.
It
close? I just mean it's not a game because nobody watches it because it's Pac-12. Nobody on the West Coast even pays attention. They're like, oh, this is a game. Where's the SEC?
So how dire straits is this conference? That if that those are legitimate questions and people even asking aloud,
well, Mike
where's
is
this thing going to go? Yeah.
And Mike Chris Leach Peterson is gone.
Chris Peterson.
As far as I know, USC, they abdicated, right? They don't have a coach anymore.
Yes.
They've just decided no coach.
That's right.
Right? They just
went player coach.
Isn't that weird?
They're going to hand it over to whoever wins the quarterback battle, and Chris Peterson is going to go down and run a quarterback battle for them because he's so experienced with it.
Herm got
and
an then, extension, though. Herm right. got extended
looks
in 2024.
Great. Well, that's good to see. Yeah. David Shaw is not what he used to be. He's running on borrowed time. Mm-hmm. Chip Kelly's now like the worst coach in football. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think you could make a pretty good argument. Things continue to get worse in the Pac-12. And I tell you, if USC really were to up and leave, I think that Larry Scott would get an extension. I think that the remaining the remaining presidents in this league would say, well, look at this. More value for us. We've lost a team. Now we can finally bring in a little bit bigger, more revenue, a bigger slice of the pie. You know who's going to love it is all the, you know, Pacific Rim viewers that Larry went after.
Well,
they don't care about USC.
It comes down to revenue, and that's it always does, and that's the bottom line. And it's in,
well, that's a joke.
In the network,
that stinks.
In the revenue, and just the narrative, none of those went the right way, unfortunately.
That's why we're
going
to have to start playing 9 a.m. kickoffs in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
Because we need the cheddar. We need the chicken.
Need the chicken. Got to have that chicken. All right,
chicken.
So how much chicken is your boy Rolovich getting?
He's getting $3 million a year, actually.
$3 million a year.
Yeah,
Brock, what do we make of Rolovich? Coach Rolo.
Yeah, Pat Chen's a good one, man. They're AD. You could talk individually or collectively about this conference and the struggles, but there are some individual bright spots, and Pat Chen is one of them. The AD of Wazoo made a good basketball hire. I think both of his basketball hires, he made good hires, and I think this is a good one. And by the way, this was a desired job. And I think that speaks to what has been built there. And when you can win 11 games and when you can go to bowl game after bowl game after bowl game. Do you remember when we saw Paul Wolf at the media days? Do you remember where the depths?
Not well.
Do you remember the depths of that program?
Is that just
because
Mike doesn't remember anything? Or
no.
Is that like a Paul Wolf?
I think it's more of a Paul Wolf.
You know what?
He was not particularly
and
memorable.
Thankfully, I think you got Bill Moose at the right time of his career, mm-hmm. who moved the right mountains to get the, you know, and maybe took on some debt and took on some risk that others wouldn't have, but brought in Mike Leach and built the program to a place where it was a much more desired job. And I think a Nick Rolovich is an excellent hire.
Kyle, by the way, pulling a Brock Heward, because last week, you'll remember, we were asking him about, like, should they move on from Mike Leach? Was, no, that'd be terrible.
No,
it's history.
I
but the moment
that.
Leach takes off to go to Mississippi State,
how about that?
Kyle was sitting here going, oh, we got a coaching search. This is going to be great. We're going to get a great coach. This is going to be awesome. This is going to be better, and this and that.
Look at this
like,
guy.
He full-on Brock Hewarded this
no,
thing.
Mike, you don't understand the particulars of college football
that's
to appreciate the coaching search.
That's right.
The coaching search is the most exciting aspect of college football.
It's
particularly
like
not if
you have
your
like
team is
a
good.
Meddling program who's like going to, you know, just middle of the pack bowl games. Like you look forward to the coaching search.
That's not
the true
winter
if your
meetings.
Team is good.
Mike Leach leaving was bad. I did not want him to leave.
Oh.
Period.
Okay.
Once he's gone, well, well, now we have to move on and embrace and lean into the excitement.
Are you happy about Rolovich?
Of the coaching search? I think it's a good hire. Mm-hmm. I personally was expecting a bigger name after Mike Leach left and probably got accustomed to a lot of that national exposure.
Like a Nick Saban.
Yeah, a Dabo Sweeney.
Right.
I mean,
a Rick Neuheisel.
You know, there's a guy named Urban Meyer who's out of work.
Right.
I don't know.
Do you think
maybe
they reached
interested.
Out to Urban?
Chris Peterson said he didn't like the spotlight mm-hmm. in Seattle. Well, I got an easier meeting.
Pullman is kind of an
a
urban
soft landing
environment.
Spot for him. So I thought, you know, we had some potential. But I think Rolovich is, he's a character which the Cougs need. They need someone with some personality.
Yep.
He's a program builder.
Yes.
He went from 3 wins to 8 wins to 10 wins the last 3 years. He's, as Brock said, he does more with less.
Do you think Rolovich is sort of on the same level as those other names that you were sort of hoping for?
He's aspiring to be.
Got it.
Is he this
Who
year?
Isn't?
No. Will he be in 2021? Maybe.
Maybe. It's at least worth the conversation. Which is better? Coming up next. Now, I love the Which is Better music. Puts a smile on my face even while it's snowing outside. Your community is probably right now, whenever you're listening to this, thinking about canceling school. How do we cancel school? We can't wait. I saw a flake. Are the roads covered? Nah. Just cancel. Who cares? parents don't care.
City slickers. Yes. Listen to this. Yep.
Seriously.
Oh, yep. Gosh.
So annoying.
I live 2 miles from my work. Why don't you? That's on,
hold on.
It's a
well,
you
why
problem.
Why don't you work?
But my kids don't go to Redmond schools. They go to Seattle schools. Sure. Why are they? Don't cancel school. Just keep going to school. Very annoying. All right, which is better, Brock?
Yeah.
Frank Clark sacks or Richard Sherman picks?
Oh. Frankie ended with eight. He ended with eight sacks, but he was very disruptive. I'm going to say his sacks were
absolutely
much
right.
Yeah.
Like when Frank Clark gets, nobody here thought Frank Clark was bad. It was just I don't want to pay him a huge chunk of money.
And you were totally stuck.
You ended up getting something great out of him.
You had to make that move.
Can you ask, what did you add? If Frank Clark's sacks better than a turnover?
Well, just to watch for us. Not for their team. Not for
what
their
do
team.
We enjoy
for
watching
us.
Yes. More
what's easier to
I'd
handle?
Rather have a Richard Sherman.
Really?
And then he gets in someone's face, and he's being so obnoxious.
It drives me crazy.
Oh, man.
Oh, look at my contract I did. Look at my incentives I reached. Do I hear anybody talking now?
Do you?
Yes, because it's still a bad contract just because you hit the incentives. He could have done that without needing him to be incentives. All right, which is better, stealing signs or stealing signals?
This is which is better, the Patriots cheating or the Astros cheating?
And Red Sox, yeah.
The Astros cheating is more palatable to me. Right. That's a more palatable thing.
To me, too. It's much closer to the way the game is played.
Gamesmanship.
Yes, it is. I mean...
But why did A.J. Hinch have to take a bat to a monitor?
I don't know.
And why were they not all on the same page?
That
like,
seems
if you're going
like
to cheat, y'all better be together
hold
in
on.
This.
No, it's not as the... Are the Astros worse than the Patriots? Mm. Is it worse in baseball than it is in football? What the heck were they doing in Houston? This is elaborate. Right? This is like an elaborate plot.
It sounds conspiracy. Like it's one of four teams
does
that have elaborate plots to do this.
Does this legitimately give the Mariners a chance now?
No.
Like legitimately benefit that they
this
lose
year?
Their first and second round pick this year, their first and second round pick next year, that they could find $5 million, that you fire a really good manager,
a really good GM
that was good with, you know, at least eye for talent.
Help some of that. I mean, it'd be better if they were forced to give up, like, you know, Springer and
Bregman.
It'd be better if they were forced to give those picks to the Mariners.
Right.
Then we'd have some.
It'd be better if, like, they no longer had Bregman or Springer.
I think this is the first.
Shannon was trying to tell me that those guys won't be as good now that, you know, they can't bang on trash cans. Mm. I don't believe that for a second. I think those guys are still going to be really good.
Did anybody not pick that up at the time of them banging on trash cans?
Marco Gonzalez. Yeah, they did. People did in baseball.
But it's baseball. They're protecting each other. That's what they do. Athletes love to protect cheating. That's how they do things.
It's kind of true. That's definitely true. Mm. Which is better, Krucci Pruchels or Nick Hedonia?
Huh?
Pardon me?
This is on the 15 obscure words for everyday feelings and emotions. I'll give you one more. You want Gwenders?
What are Gwenders?
Gwenders are the tingly feeling you get in your fingers when they're cold. Gwenders.
Are these new words that
I don't know.
People
I just
have made up?
No, these are old
or
words.
Is it just like adopted words? Like we took like Schadenfreude from German?
Some of them are
what was
from
the first thing
countries.
You said?
Well, I like the Krucci Pruchels.
Yeah, what's a Krucci Pruchel?
That's from the Scottish word. Oh. It means the feeling of discomfort or fidgetiness that comes from sitting in a cramped position, like say in an airplane.
I was just going to say, I have that on every flight I've ever been
when you start getting all antsy, you
get like tingling
you get the Krucci Pruchels.
The Krucci Pruchels.
The one that actually relates to sports, though, is Nicodonia. Nikhedonia. Nicodonia. You're playing a game, and you suddenly realize you've got it in the bag, or you're watching your favorite team play, and after a close-fought match, you see they're definitely going to win. Instead of saying blouses or lighting up a victory cigar, that is when you have Nicodonia. The feeling of excitement or elation that comes from anticipating success.
Huh. Nicodonia.
Nicodonia. It's what the Packers had the moment they threw to Jimmy Graham.
Root word from Nicodemus, story in the Bible, who climbed a tree to look for Jesus.
It was like a Nicoderm.
He knew he was winning at the time.
Patch.
And when you put on, it's the feeling of putting on a nicotine patch and getting lightheaded. Nicodonia.
Which is better, Tony Romo or Brock Huber?
Romo, for sure. I'm
ESPN
a Romo guy.
Certainly seems to think so.
Please.
Brock is not a Romo guy.
Which is
ESPN is
better
gonna pay
value?
Him $15 million a year, and you have to leave to go to Fox.
Which is a better value?
I'll take Brock on value all
yes.
day.
Which is a better Brock value? On value. Brock,
every day.
Or Tony Romo times 76 my salary. 76 times, I think, my salary.
Is it?
I kid. It's Brock. Remember the time Awful Announcing was floating Brock to replace
Monday Night Football?
For Monday Night Football? Yeah.
Would you have done it for $15 million or not? Would you have passed? Would you have really started negotiating? Look, that's when the conversation starts. Let me ask you this.
15-0.
If you and Tony Romo were both playing golf and you accidentally hit a ball up into like a patio area and needed, you were, I don't know, like 75 yards from the green, who would get closer to the pin?
Oh, Tony Romo.
Yeah, you seen that?
Phew.
When he did that a few years ago.
Oh, insane golfer.
It's awesome.
Yes.
It's so great. Have you seen that, Kyle?
No.
It was, so at the, it was at the Pro-Am.
Yes.
And he put the ball up on like a...
Oh, in Tahoe.
No.
Oh.
In
Pebble.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he puts the ball up on a like a patio where people are eating, like a dining patio.
Oh, he's a good
guy.
That
has like AstroTurf.
Yeah, no.
He goes up there,
yep.
puts perfect backspin on the ball, and puts it within 3 feet.
Yeah, he's good.
It's pretty good.
Nice to have that in your bag.
Yeah. Speaking of guys, I complained about this the other day. Why isn't Greg Gumbel the second CBS group?
I don't know.
Does that make any sense? And that's not a shot at Ian Eagle. He's fine.
Yeah.
But Greg Gumbel's really good. He's called 2 Super Bowls.
Agreed.
Why isn't he their second crew? You're in the business.
Yeah.
I ask you to explain these things.
Greg Gumbel. Who's his color analyst? Is it about
Trent Green?
The partner? It's Green versus Fouts. Is that the decision probably. They're making?
Yeah. Well, then he should be with Fouts.
Yep.
Just because you break the up bird the bird and the beard?
I know.
My.
Right, there is that. That's fair.
Yeah, just sanctity.
Fair enough.
Marriage.
Which, which is better? Neil Peart or every other musician in recorded history?
Mm.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Did you know that he was that sick with brain cancer?
Nobody did.
Nobody knew?
No. No.
Wow.
When they made their final tour a few years ago, he was already sick. Nobody knew.
Wow.
And, you know, the other guys were sort of saying, hey, we're not going to do it anymore, and we're done, and Neil's done, and we respect that, but nobody knew this was why. We just thought he didn't want to play anymore. He was just toast. But it's really
incredible.
Sad. I Tom and I are going to, later this week, put out a one-off, one-time podcast talking
Please.
All about this.
Really?
We put together a whole... Yeah, we're going to be recording it within the next day or two.
Mm.
I don't know what it's going to be called yet. And we're just going to release it one time.
You're going to let Bob produce?
No. Bob's not a huge Rush fan. But Tom and I are going to... We have some memories. We have some specific passages and things we want to play. For me personally, and we'll talk more...
Well, it's like a Bible
parts of, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You list the album, the track, and how far into the track it is.
Is that what they're called? Passages?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A passage to Bangkok.
You can do all things through Rush, who strengthens.
There's a there's going to be a nicotation to it.
He was my he was my favorite musician
ever.
And it's not close. No other musician meant more to me in my life than Neil Peart. Just the number of hours spent listening to their music and trying to learn to play the drums because of him, quitting playing the drums because I could never be even close to as good as him. I mean, just... He was everything for me as a musician. So just a huge, huge bummer.
And it sure felt like, in reading the reaction in the social media world, he was maybe the one musician that, as far as a drummer goes, there was not an equal.
No.
Because musicians usually argue and fight just as we do, and over athletes and quarterbacks and everything else, and vocalists and
just like, no, it's
guitarists
him.
And bassists. And
drummer? No, it'd be Neil. Even people who hate Rush, they're just like, yeah, but I mean Neil, obviously.
Mike showed me a video of him yesterday, and I don't know music. I don't know Rush. I could appreciate it just from a, like, physiological sense.
Just what
like,
he's doing.
Look at the shape this guy is in. How is he still doing this?
It's pretty amazing. When he's doing his 10-minute drum solo 2.5 hours into a concert where he's gone, it's amazing. Just an amazing human being and incredibly, incredibly sad. Mm. Tragic story, too. You know, he lost his wife to cancer. His daughter was in a car accident.
Jeez.
That was about 20 years ago. And then he kind of left the band for a while, rode around the country on his motorcycle, and then eventually got remarried, had another child, and got back into music. But it's just, I mean, really tragic over the last 20 years of his life.
Give me your weather one. I like
which
that.
Which is better, Seattle snow freak out or Seattle heat
smoke.
Freak out?
It's a smoke. It's not heat.
Right,
it's
the smoke. Right. Which is a bigger freak out?
Yes.
Seattle smoke or Seattle snow?
I'm interested to hear your take because you don't appreciate either.
Yes. You have no sympathy for either one.
Yeah, you have a heap of creatures or whatever that first word was. What was your first word?
I got the croochie-proochles. Which is
smoke?
Better?
I'll go run in the smoke. I love the smoke. Oh, smoke? Oh, that's tough and
I got no croochie pruples when it comes to the smoke.
The snow
running green
is
like
much
in
better.
This smoke.
The snow freak out is much better. The smoke freak out is much worse. The snow is like, all right, I get it. It's, you know, there are not enough plows here, so.
It's clear and present danger.
But the smoke, whatever. It's hot.
That's not going to matter for, that's not going to affect my health for 40 years.
It's nice out. It's warm. What else
my
do you want?
My kids are going to die someday anyway.
Gosh.
Ash on my car, who cares?
I'll take the ash over the snow. That's for sure. Snow's gross. Just horrible. Ugh. All right. That's which is better for today. That's the Brock and Salk podcast for this week as well. You can look for the Salk and Wassel Rush podcast coming out later this week. Just one time. One time only. Let's see if we can get
text Rush to 710-710.
I don't think you can do that. Don't do that. It won't bounce back to you. You're just going to bother whoever's on the air at the time. All right. This is a lot of fun. We will be back next week, and we'll talk to you guys then. Till then, hey.
Barn.
See everybody.
Get to the chopper!